It is good to be back. It was great to get to go on vacation with my family, and I got this last weekend. I got to go to Arkansas to see my sister, and that was great. Jake and I flew out to Fayetteville, and we had a great time. But it's great to be back. And I think, you know, as Paul referenced, it's been obviously a very interesting week in a lot of ways. But at least for us in Tampa, I am very thankful for the joy that we can experience through our sports teams, because we have never being one of the few from Tampa and living with the Creamsicle Bucks for all those years. People don't understand. They just don't what we went through. And so to have a playoff win was marvelous, and just to experience joy with my family and my father last night was excellent. And actually, we're going to be walking through, we're going to do about a six-week series, I think, through taking some pictures of the gospel through the lens of Moses. But actually, we're going to be looking at the kind of through the lens of Deuteronomy, which is the fifth book in the Bible, the last book in the Torah, starting next week. But this week, what I wanted to do was just talk about this new year. And, you know, as we looked at 2020, a lot of the themes, if you heard us, we were kind of preaching and teaching through, hey, we need to endure. And we need to persevere, and that's a big deal. And we know what 2020 was about, and we're still needing to do that. But as I thought about this week, I thought, you know what? I think we need wisdom. Of course, we need to persevere. But what does it look like for us as Christians here in January in 2021? What does it look like for us to be wise, to be discerning? What does that mean? Because we live in all the more in a pluralistic society, and we're always fighting about morality. And I think if you look back at the ancient Near East, there was more consensus about morality than there is now. As we think about this, you know, moral standards, and they're very crucial, and we know the mess that we're in. When we think about science and we think about facts and we think about morality, what does it mean for us to say, okay, let's take all of these things, but then to be wise? I mean, what does wisdom really look like? And so if you have your Bibles, I want you to turn to Proverbs chapter 8, because wisdom is essentially, it's a rhetorical device. It's wisdom is personified in this Proverbs 8, and it's talking about itself, if you will. And it says, Proverbs 8, we know King Solomon wrote this, choose my instruction, wisdom, instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior and perverse speech. Counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have insight. I have power. By me, kings reign and rulers issue decrees that are just. By me, princes govern, and nobles, all who rule on earth. And I just ask you, do you value wisdom? Because what this is saying is it's infinitely more important than wealth. It's infinitely more important than fame and power. It's greater than anything we can really hope to grasp, because it is the ability to grow, and not just to grow, but to flourish under any circumstances. And I think we need that now. That right now, if we can be wise, we can flourish. That's what's offered to us. Because we know that, yes, Some of us in this life have had great circumstance. Maybe some of us have had fame or fortune in some way, or happiness. But the writer of Proverbs says, but it doesn't compare to wisdom, to living a wise life. Because here's what we know. Only a tiny minority of people in this world get or have all of their life circumstances the way they want them. And we also know that even if they're there for a little bit, normally they're not kept. And so what we need to do is we need to value wisdom, because we know lots of people who have talent and intellect and charisma and credentials and beauty, and we've known those people to have those things and go nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And then other people we've known to have little talent, little intellect, right, little charisma, and man, wow, look what they've done without this abundant of talent or gifting. And so when you look at wisdom, many decisions that we make require simply knowledge. And we know those things. You need this knowledge. But think about all the bigger questions that require much more than just knowledge. Like, who are you supposed to marry? Are you supposed to marry? Who should you date? Should I break up with this person? What career should I go into? What school should I enroll in? Should I stay here in this area? Should I go get a job over there? Should I move here? Should I confront this person? Or maybe I should confront that person. We can have ethics, and we can have knowledge, and we can have scientific fact, but then when it comes down to it, the application of what? Of all those things is what? It's wisdom. Should I take this risk, or should I play it safe? Should I storm the Capitol? But I'm kidding. I shouldn't say that. I probably shouldn't even laugh at it. I'm trying to, a little comic relief there. I found everything so intense all the time. Do you know that wrong decisions in these areas can be disasters? Maybe you've experienced that. You've just made the wrong decision. You have not been wise. And the scriptures say, you know what we have? We have the ability to obtain wisdom. And I think for many of us, what does it look like for us to value that? Because a lot of us are smart in the sense that we have obtained a lot of knowledge and we have unbelievable retention. And some of you are very ethical and very, very moral. But that doesn't always, cover all these things. Remember, what does it say in verse 12? I, wisdom, together with prudence, I possess knowledge and discretion. Verse 14, counsel and sound judgment are mine. I have insight. Insight. Being able to see beyond what? Just simple fact. You can see through. You can understand a situation and apply it. So I want to give you this example. This is an example from 1 Samuel, where you have King David, and he's had his son Absalom, and his son Absalom has utterly betrayed him. And Absalom has said, you know what? I need wisdom, and so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to essentially win over this one wise man named Ahithophel. Let's say that together. Okay? Ahithophel. Very good. Okay. So, Ahithophel was very insightful, had sound judgment, and Absalom used him. And David realized, oh my goodness, how in the world am I going to win back the kingdom of Israel? My son is taking over, and I don't know what to do. And he had another wise counselor named Hushiah. And Hushiah said to David, I am loyal to you. I will do whatever you want. So David said, here's what I need you to do. I need you to work your way into Absalom's kingdom, but be stealth. Don't be so obvious. And if you read 2 Samuel 15 through 17, you read this story where Hushiah basically works his way into the good graces of Absalom. And David is fleeing, and he's nervous that his own son will kill him. And basically, Absalom says, okay, I know David is fleeing from me, and he's nervous. Should I attack him now, or should I wait? And Ahithophel, who was very smart, said, now. You do it now. You have to be, you got to do it while it's hot, right? You got to move right now. But Absalom knew he had Hushai too. And Hushai had worked his way, and Absalom knew he was a counselor too. And Hushai, in his wisdom, said, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to play on Absalom's vanity. I'm going to play on that. And I'm going to play on Absalom's fear. And so here's what Hushai said. He said, you know what? I think you need to wait. Because David is out there with his mighty men. And he is fleeing from you, but you know what we know about David. He has fleed from Saul, but he is also very, very, he's strong, he's wise. And if you go after him too quickly, you know what? He could turn the tables on you. He might kill you or elude you, and you know what you will look like? Your poll numbers, they will sink, Absalom. You can't do that. So he plays and he prays on Absalom's fear. And then he says, but you know what? On the other hand, you are popular, Absalom. And you know what? Everybody loves you. Why don't you just sit tight and not do anything stupid, right? And what he began to do was play on his vanity. Because Hushai knew and could see and was wise. He could see the situation and he knew what he needed to do, what? For King David to continue to reign. And he knew that Absalom was not the right man for the job. He was not the anointed by God. And so he had to be wise. And it's amazing because when Absalom said to Hushai in front of Ahithophel, said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait because I don't want my poll numbers to sink. And I want to be wise. We don't know what David's going to do. You know what Ahithophel did? He realized at that moment he's not taking wise advice. He killed himself. Ahithophel knew at that moment, okay, it's over. Ahithophel knew that if you reject wisdom, you can keep disaster away for a little bit, but not for forever. And he prayed on Absalom's, or Hushai prayed on his feelings of inferiority and superiority. Because Absalom did not have an accurate view of who he was. And we are not wise when we can't see ourselves. And many of us can't. We cannot see ourselves for who we are. We think we can, but we ultimately don't. And we realize, you know, the definition of wisdom is tough. Because wisdom is more than knowledge. It's more than ethics. It's more than morals. What is the wise thing to do? And you think of it in the context of this week. What is the wisest thing to do? Lots of people took lots of action this week. And the question that we as Christians, as people that base our life upon the Bible, we have to ask, is this the wisest thing to do? And I'm just saying from any angle, do you live your life that way? Do you live this week that way? Because when you really look at wisdom, when you really understand everything, here, we're going to continue on. We're actually going to jump to Proverbs 8, verse 22. That the Lord brought me forth as the first of his works. Before his deeds of old, I was formed long ages ago at the very beginning when the world came to be. Wisdom was there before creation happened. That's essentially what this is saying. When there were no watery depths, I was given birth. Wisdom. Where there were no springs overflowing with water, before the mountains were settled in place, before the hills, I, wisdom, was given birth. Before he made the world or its fields or any of the dust of the earth, I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above and fixed securely the fountains of the deep, when he gave the sea its boundary so the waters would not overstep his command, and when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I, wisdom, was constantly at his side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence. I, rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in mankind. Do you know that? That wisdom was with God before he decided to create the world. And God was wise, and the pattern of this world was literally, wisdom was with God when he was forming the world. Do we believe that? So that the fabric pattern of God, right, that there's a pattern to God's reality, to God's spiritual reality. The point being, God made the world with a wise pattern. Wisdom is there. So many of us, we take this and we think, that's right. Of course it is. And you read the first 9 chapters of Proverbs, right? And we believe things like this. If you work hard, you'll prosper. If you're lazy, you'll be poor. If you live according to moral absolutes, your life will go well. If you live a wicked life, your life won't go well. If you raise a child according to this pattern, if you raise him rightly or her rightly, when she or he is old, she will love you and she will be a responsible adult, right? And you think to yourself, that's right. That's a traditional mindset. And you say, yeah, that's right. If you don't work, shoot. Or if you do this, yeah, I like that. I like to see people hurt when they don't work hard. But you know what? As you begin to continue on through the book of Proverbs, you realize, wait, and we've talked about this a few months ago, that there are a number of Proverbs that says that some people who live according to God's moral absolutes, you know what they have? A lousy life. What do you do with that? How do you deal with that? Wait, I thought, if we have this traditional mindset, it's supposed to work this way. Some people, they say, work hard, but you know what? Because they're oppressed, they do not get to be rich. What do you do with that? That when some parents raise their kid very, very traditionally, you know what they see? The prodigal. And their kid goes off the rail. What do you do with that? I mean, we've seen plenty of examples over the past 15 years here of parents who are getting up and making the donuts every week, right? And they are loving their kids. And you know what happens? Their kids go off the rails. They make some poor decisions. And they come and ask me, well, Frank, what's the deal, man? I brought them to church regularly. They went to youth group. Why are they like this? What is the deal? What's the, you know, cause and effect? Well, what we realize is that God did make a world with a wise pattern. But here's what we know. God made the world with a wise pattern, and we know that it's partially hidden too. We cannot recognize and cannot grasp all of the pattern. We don't know the plan. It's not formulaic. And when you think about that dynamic, how do you live your life? Because remember, look at Job. Job, the book of Job is about Job's suffering, but he did everything right. Everything he had done, he worked hard, but everything went wrong. His life fell apart. His children died. He lost all his money, and he still worshiped God. What do you do with that? That God has a wise pattern, and we can comprehend some of that, but we can't comprehend all of it. How are we supposed to live? Because what Job's friends said is they were very harsh, and they said to Job, well, you must be doing something behind my back, because God wouldn't allow this to happen to you if you're such a stand-up dude. You got to be doing something in your office, you know, when no one's watching on the computer. You must be doing this or that. I know you are. And what we find out if you read the whole book is he wasn't. And we have to know as Christians that we can't see the whole pattern of God. And wisdom is what? that's got to be in our crock pot. That's got to be in how we understand what's going on in the world, is that we don't know everything and that we can't be certain about everything, and we have to be wise. And so when we look at the events of this world this week, don't tell me that you can be certain and that you know exactly what's going on, because we don't. We don't always know what God is doing and what wisdom is. Because if you're the kind of person that says, if I live a good life, my life will go well, then you know what? The Bible says you're a traditional fool. But conversely, if you say, well, then the world doesn't have any rules and everything's relative, then the book of Proverbs says you're also a fool. So we're left with, okay, then what? I mean, what are you saying then? What does it mean ultimately to be wise? If I can be a moralistic fool and I can be a relativistic fool, how am I supposed to comprehend what I saw on television? How am I supposed to comprehend the fracturing of our society? Because we're seeing it all the time. I think it's key for our church. I think it's key for the universal church right now to be very humble and to not claim to know a whole lot. We can claim to know some things, but when people begin to speak certainly about this is what's happening, this is what needs to happen, I don't trust it. I don't trust it. Because you don't know. And there's some mystery to the pattern of God. That's not to say that you don't have a handle on some things, but let me tell you, there's a lot of people out there right now in the church, in the Christian church, that are saying, this is exactly what's happening, and I don't trust it. So I was, you know, watching everything. I was a bit undone. And I called one of the guys that Richard Pratt, who's my hero. He was my professor at seminary, and we talked for a while this past week. I thought, he told me, he said, you know, Frank, here's what I think Satan might do. And I don't, you know, he didn't claim to know exactly the right answer about everything, which I love about him, because he has a PhD from Harvard in Old Testament, and I feel like he is about Moses to me, you know, like you about know everything. But he did say this. He went up to a church up north, and he spoke on the power of the unity of the church and how that is a witness. And I want to remind all of us that as Christians, Christmas and Easter have to be the most important dates of the year for us. It has to invade our hearts and be so contagious. It's the thing that we will speak about, and the volume in our iPhone, right? The volume in our AirPods need to be a volume of 10 when it comes to Christmas. Jesus came, and Christmas died, and Easter he died and he rose again. And that's my fear. Is that it's not. That we're saying all these things about these situations, and we're not telling people about the beauty of that the God of the universe put flesh on, and that he lived perfectly and died humbly for us. Because I don't hear the church saying that. I don't hear those that I know Jesus. I hear them saying other things, secondary things. And what I feel like is happening is that we're fracturing, and it makes me nervous, and I don't know what to do. Because if our church, if our session, me as a pastor is leading this church, and the heartbeat isn't Christmas and Easter, I have failed. I mean, particularly in the midst of all this stuff. I mean, I am a horrible, horrible leader if we are not focusing on, can you believe God put on flesh and dwelt among us? And can you believe that he lived perfectly and then died for me? If that's not the heartbeat, I want to quit. I do. It's made me want to think, like, if that's not happening in our church, I just want to resign. Be like, hey, look, that's my job. That's the session's job. That's why we're here in West Chase, is to tell people Christmas and Easter matter. particularly when all this craziness is going on. And what Richard said was, I worry about Christians accusing one another of being either way too conservative or way too liberal, and it fracturing because no one's talking about Jesus. Everybody's talking about what needs to happen in America, and no one is reading the Gospels and saying, no, whatever. You know what? If Rome comes and oppresses me, if Hitler comes and oppresses me, like, you know, a Corrie Ten Boom, it doesn't matter. What matters is Christmas came, and we're walking to Easter. And if we don't believe that, we're not wise. We can be moral. We can know a ton of stuff. We can be ethical, but we are not wise if we're not talking about this stuff. And when you look at the story of Scripture, when you begin to what? Long for God. And when you read this verse and it's personified, me, right? I am wisdom, this verse is saying. And you realize, I'm called to long for this. And I'm called to see wisdom and to look at this situation and be like, okay, what does it mean for us to be wise? Because, you know, all of the other religions, they say this. They say, I am going to try to reach for wisdom. I'm going to try to take on a yoke. I'm going to go find a yoke. And a yoke is essentially the way that you view the world. What does Jesus say? No, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take my yoke upon you, you that are weary and heavy laden, and you take my yoke upon you, and I'm going to give you rest. Why? Because Jesus already did it. He already lived wisely. He is wisdom incarnate. He lived perfectly. And remember, Jesus at no point in his 33 years was ever in power, political power. He never had any imperial or military power ever. But we're still talking about him, and you tell me, are we talking about Julius Caesar? Are we talking about Caesar Augustus? No. And so when we begin to think, okay, what's the clue for a solution here? He says, look, I want you to make sure that you understand that the secret of wisdom began with Jesus and the Father and the Spirit in perfect relationship. And what did they do? They glorified each other. They deferred to each other. They honored each other. They were in perfect relationship. And so every other major religion will say this. Here's the key to wisdom. Learn these principles. You want to be a Buddhist? Learn the Eightfold Path, right? You want to learn the key to being a good person and you follow Islam? Do these things. And here's what Christianity says. No, I don't want you to do anything. I want you to be in relationship with me. You need wisdom. You need intimacy with Jesus. Because that's the beautiful offering of the gospel. And when Jesus says, I am the wisdom of God. When you read John 1 and you realize the Logos means wisdom. In the beginning was the Word, right? But that in Greek is the Logos. In the beginning was the wisdom. And the wisdom was God. And the wisdom was with God. If you live your life in January of 2021 in relationship with Jesus, and you think, okay, I have my morals, and I have my knowledge, and this facts, but the most important wisdom I have is my relationship with Jesus. And then you take that relationship and apply those things, then I think we will begin to do things like Jesus would do them. And when we begin to understand that, and then Jesus said, here, when you understand that intimacy, you know what you're going to be? You're going to be an unbelievable dad. You're going to be a great friend. You're going to be a great daughter. But it all starts about you being in relationship with wisdom incarnate, with Jesus. And the rest of the world says, okay, when you come to religion, you just learn some principles. And what we have to offer here is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And that is what I don't hear anybody just pounding right now. It is the most important thing. I feel like we have some leaders that have lost their way. They think they know exactly what it is, and what they need to be telling people is, no, I need to go spend, like Jesus did, I need to go spend time with the Father. I mean, you think about Jesus Christ. If he turned people away to heal, why? Because Jesus knew he needed a quiet time in the morning with God. So Jesus, there were people, cripples, people with leprosy, and what did Jesus say to them? Nope, sorry. I'm going to go have my quiet time with the Father, because here's what I know. Wisdom incarnate is going to come from my Father, and it's going to be the Father and the Son and the Spirit working together, and that's what we have. But I think instead, when for a lot of the problems that we have, we don't have chapter and verse. And no one's talking about the power of the relationship that we have with the God of the universe. And I would encourage you to engage with that more than you maybe have over the past month, to say, you know, am I intimate with the Father? Am I intimate with Jesus? Am I experiencing the Holy Spirit? That's what's offered to you. Before we say anything, before we say, oh, I know exactly, this is what we need to do, and you know what that person is? That person's that, and this person's this. What? I mean, WWJD, what would Jesus do right now? I mean, read the Gospels. How did he act? Where are you? What does it mean to be wise? We have a pattern that we can apprehend and we can comprehend, but we don't have this full exhaustive pattern that God gives us. But we do have legitimate patterns. And particularly knowing that you have a relationship with Jesus, when you know that, and you say, okay, you know what? I'm going to be educated. I'm going to know what the morals are and the knowledge here, but I'm going to be in prayer. I'm going to be in the Word. I'm going to be filled with the Spirit. I mean, when you're there, then I say, okay, you know what you become? You become salt, and then you become light, and that's what Jesus wants to go out. But here's my fear. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not blaming you, I'm not saying anybody personally. I've just felt at a macro level, particularly this week, is the church. Are we incarnating what we're called to incarnate? Are we being a distinct, peculiar people as we're called to be? Because really what we have is our relationship with Jesus. And man, that, I think the world longs. The world needs truth. The world needs purpose. There's nothing more powerful than that right now. That's what it can look like. Where are you? How are you living? Are you thinking wisely? Are you thinking deeply? But okay, what does it mean at this point right now for me to live as a wise, humble Christian? I don't know what it means practically, specifically for you personally, but I know at a very general level, if we were to apply those principles, I think it would sound different. I think people would be like, man, I can't even put you Christians in a category, because you're dealing with this thing in ways that no one else is. And it's so attractive, because I can't put you in a box. And that's what Jesus does for us. That's the foundation and the contentedness that we have in him. So let's pray right now, and let's ask God to fill us with his wisdom, that we would understand the delight that comes from being in relationship with him, and then apply that. God, wisdom is